This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 241 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
This week's episode is brought to you by FabFitFun. The Spring 2018 box is now on sale. Some of the items that you'll get in the Spring 2018 box are 4 fashion-forward products to launch your look into full bloom for spring, including the Maya Brenner Designs Love Bracelet in rose or white in every box, or the Itika Tassel Earrings in blush or black. Now, that is a choice item, and the color may vary.
And the spring box also includes 7 self-care products for a relaxing night of pampering. I mean, who doesn't want to do that? And these include Free People and Understated Leather Starry Eye Mask in 3 colors, and it features a removable cooling insert that you can put in the freezer, and it helps depuff eyes. And this is in every box, although colors may vary. And it also has a Physique 57 massage roller in 4 colors. It'll be in every box.
Now, the total retail value of the FabFitFun Spring Box is over $350.
Tell me what you felt when you got the Spring Box. I know that when I got it, I, like, angels were singing, oh, I couldn't wait to open it.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I said this last time, but it feels like Christmas, because you may have a little bit of an idea of what's coming. You know that you're going to get 4 fashion forward products and 7 or so self-care products. So, you know, kind of you have an idea, but you don't know. And even if you know what some of the products are specifically, you still don't know. Rachel Pally Clutch in 3 reversible designs. Mine was like a cream white with that was the leather part of it. And then on the fabric side of it, it was yellow, like it had yellow flowers. It's very pretty.
Mine, the leather side, was like, it was not Tiffany blue, but it was very close. I mean,
oh, you must have been in heaven.
Oh, girl, they read my mind. And not only do they have a beautiful clutch, but another item that I liked, that I like playing with actually, is the ISH Lip Statement Palette to experiment with your own color combos. You can mix and match to create endless color combos.
One of my other favorite things that came in was the Physique 57 Massage Roller. Mine came in purple.
And I'm a little jealous because mine came in it's a beautiful salmon, like a salmon coral. But good Lord, that thing is strong.
It's the best thing I never knew I always needed.
I know.
You know, it's like I took it out of the box and I was like, what am I going to do with this? Because I anticipated, I'm like, you see, it's like these 2 handles with 2 balls in the middle and they're like kind of spiky. And I was like, how do I even use this? And then I literally just grabbed it and kind of rubbed it on my lower back. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is mine. I love it. And for people whose hands get super tired when giving massages, this was a nice one for giving massages to other people. One of the things I love about FabFitFun is that there are no repeat products. It's always something new. It's always something fresh. And it's always something that is current and fashion forward or self-care forward. So it's always going to be something new and something exciting on the market.
And what I love about it is that it's delivered 4 times a year for just $49.99.
Sign up for FabFitFun today to get your spring box. The FabFitFun spring box is in limited supply, and these boxes always sell out. So use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first box.
Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first box. That's over $350 for only $39.99.
Go to FabFitFun.com and use our code OUTLANDER to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box. And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our Drums of Autumn read-along. We're beginning part 7, entitled On the Mountain, starting with chapter 19, entitled Hearth Blessings.
It is September 1767, and we are on the ridge.
Woohoo!
Yes, sweet baby Jeezy-boozy. The chapter opens with Claire scrambling for air, squished between Jamie and young Ian, and the wet Rollo.
That sounds kind of sexy, but...
Oh, Lord. Wait, Rollo sounds sexy?
Well, not Rollo, but sandwiched between young Ian and Jamie.
Well, I said squished, but you say sandwich. I know where your brain is.
Yes.
She's like, yeah, and...
There ain't no shame in my game.
She describes their smell, or the smell, as, quote, confined male animals and sort of musky, rancid smell garnished with the scent of wet wool and fish, unquote. Mm. And you know that fish is all Rollo. Speaking of scents,
Yes.
What's your least favorite scent besides something obvious like a skunk that you can't, that's a cop out. You can't say that.
See, now, and even skunks I don't totally hate because...
Oh, Lord, we talked about this. They remind they you of home. Oh, my gosh. The only person on the earth that I've ever encountered who doesn't necessarily love skunk. You don't want to wear their O, but you.
Yeah.
It has a fond memory.
Probably some of my least favorite scents are rotting food. And I don't like driving by feedlots that smell like.
Oh, that's gross.
And like cows. Like. Cow poop and
I like the smell of horse poop. I don't want to dance in it.
That doesn't smell like poop. That smells like grass.
Grass.
But
I know,
cow
right?
poop is a completely different entity.
Oh, that's methane. Yeah.
Yeah. That's gross.
My least favorite scent outside of and again, well, okay. So if I don't let you or well for you, it doesn't matter. You like the skunk. But if I tell you something like you can't use skunk or something obvious, then I can't use something like cat poop, right? Because that's too obvious. Let me see. Okay, this is going to sound, don't be upset with me, but this is going to sound really bad. Okay, I'm not going to say when this was or where it was because there's no guilty parties, but I'm keeping the details shaded, blocked, whatever. I attended a funeral of a person a number of years ago, and it was the daughter of someone I knew. And which was very sad. Our entire community was just devastated. And I went to like a wake and then the funeral and then, you know, graveside. I did all the stuff out of respect and I wanted to be there for the family and the community. There were lilies everywhere, which is not uncommon, right? Lilies are often given at bereavement.
Oh, I don't like the way lilies smell.
Oh, summer. Lilies smell like death. No, they don't smell like a dead corpse, but I associate them with death. And so whenever I smell them, like I walk into Trader Joe's and I'm like, whoa, I can't. I'm like, oh, get away. Also, lilies would kill my cat. So never give me, if you guys want to give me flowers, never give me lilies because number one, gross. I don't like the smell. They're beautiful, but I don't like the smell. Number two, I can't bring them home. So I'll be either giving them away or tossing them because lilies kill cats.
I don't like the way lilies smell either. Those star lilies are so pretty, but they stink. They smell like funerals.
Exactly. They smell like death. Exactly. So more description of their Eden here. The air was fresh, so fresh that Claire nearly coughs when she takes in a lungful of it. Have you ever been somewhere? Well, okay. We've all coughed with like skunks or man, all this stuff about smell. We've all been there where it's been, you know, inhaling a not so, you know, pretty fumes, right? Gross smells. Have you ever inhaled something so fresh that it made you cough like Claire did here?
Yep.
You're hard tonight. Erica B. writes, so far there is not a thing that sounds delightful about their bit of the ridge. It's wet, chilly, and limited time to build a cabin before the snow falls. Erica B. continues, it doesn't seem like a great time of year to be sleeping out to me. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised no one got sick. Well, that's true. But also, with Diana and wanting to get her character to the next year, ain't nobody got time for that. I did not drink anything tonight, but I do feel a little bit loopy. Claire gets ready. Now, she'd been sleeping in Jamie's spare shirt and she puts on her buckskins. They are in Jamie's saddlebag. She gets down to the stream to wash, and it wasn't quite dawn. And I learned a new word, or was reminded of a word. Thanks, Diana. Oh, I hope I say it correct. Crepuscule. And it's a fancy way of saying twilight.
What's your favorite word you learned because of Diana Gabaldone?
There's a few that she uses. I mean, there's a lot that she uses. Ones that either I just like didn't know them, found them out through her, you know, learned how to pronounce them through Davina, and then just like, I was so happy that I accomplished something that I just clung to them. And now I like see them everywhere. And I mean, by everywhere, I mean everywhere in Diana's writing. They're not everywhere, but it does seem that there are certain words that she, you know, at least a few times a book, maybe 100 times in a book, uses. And one of the words that remains with me, and I love the way it sounds and also what it means. And I may be slightly mispronouncing it, but Susurrus.
Susurrus.
Yeah. It's either Susurrus or Susurrus. I think it's Susurrus. And no, it's not a dinosaur. It's a, it's the sound like, it's a really, one of the best ways I've heard it described is it's the sound that a sword makes coming out of its sheath. Like a, you know, I can't even do it, but whatever. That word, and then Octothorpe. She talked on and on about Octothorpe when Moby was being released. I loved it. What about you?
I don't remember what it means, but it was absquatulate.
Oh, she uses that a lot too. I think it just means like to go on about something, just talk about something.
I just like the word. Okay.
Go Google that. You're easy. Go Google this summer. Okay.
Absquatulate. It means leave abruptly. No, absquatulate.
Oh, are you kidding me? I was like, I was not 5% off. I was 180. Good Lord. Yep.
It says absquatulate is a deeply silly word. That means to make off with something or someone. Why say a thief ran away with your money when it's so much more fun to say he absquatulated with it?
Okay, so absquatulate is along the lines of...
abscond.
Yes. I was about to say, the first part sounds like it almost. But yeah, so I'm going to use absquatulate from now on. When someone takes or I take something, I'm going to be honest about it and like, look, officer, it was me. I absquatulated.
It was grand theft absquatulation.
Absquatulation. Gosh. Oh, my goodness. So Jamie had said that they should stay on the mountain instead of returning to Cross Creek. In early September, they'd have 2 months to get set up for shelter before the winter hit. And they had time to build a small cabin, to hunt for meat, and to prep for the winter. Jamie says, quote, "It will be gay hard work." And I thought, huh? Not G-A-Y, G-E-Y. I'm like, wait. Because whenever I hear gay, and it's spelled G-A-Y, whenever I hear outside of like today's, you know, the most popular meaning or most obvious meaning, I always think of, we'll have a gay old time. What was that from?
Flintstones.
Yes. I always think of Flintstones.
Well, you clearly don't think of the Flintstones. You think of the song.
Yeah. Well, that's how my head is. You know how my head and my ear and my mouth.
Oh, I know your mouth.
Shush. Don't give away secrets. So this gay is spelled G-E-Y, and it means very or quite. And it is chiefly used in Scotland. And I found this through Merriam-Webster. And so basically he's saying it will be very hard work or quite hard work. So, okay, that's easy. He's like, why don't you just speak English, Jamie?
I mean, you are in America now.
Right? There's a chance they'll fail, but he's willing to try. Claire thought they'd return to Cross Creek for winter. There, they could have gathered supplies and settlers in a leisurely manner and come back in spring, caravan fashion. If they stayed now, they'd be completely alone, far away from other European settlements. The supplies they had with them were limited to a felling axe, a couple of knives, a camp kettle and girdle, and Claire's smaller medicine box. Jamie didn't want to go back, of course, because being there even more would, quote, sink him that much further in obligation, make it that much harder to reject her blandishments, unquote. And she was a born Mackenzie. It is healthy to be wary of them. There was also another reason, Diana tells us, stay far away from Sergeant Murchison and Parker Campbell with the planters and the regulators and slaves and politics. I mean, there's like more than one reason. There's a lot of things. But she didn't think any of these reasons were why he decided to stay on the ridge. They play a quick game of owl while she waits, which is basically who can blink first, right? Or who doesn't blink first. Yeah, I guess who blinks first. While she waits for him to tell her the reason he decided to stay. Quote, "How shall I tell you what it is to feel the need of a place, the need of snow beneath Mashun, the breath of the mountains, breathing their own breath in my nostrils as God gave breath to Adam, the scrape of rock under my hand, climbing, and the sight of lichens on it, enduring in the sun and wind," unquote. And, quote, "If I am to live as a man, I must have a mountain," unquote.
I mean, he can't just be happy with like any land, but he has to have a mountain.
Good Lord, Jamie Fraser. A little bit picky now. So will she trust him?
She didn't think that through.
With her heart and her life. Always. So they decide. Myers would go back to Cross Creek, give Duncan Jamie's instructions, and let Jocasta know that they were okay, and he'd bring back as much as he could in supplies. He, meaning Myers, would bring back as much as he could in supplies with the rest of the money that they had. He'd return if he could before first snow, and young Ian would be staying to help build and hunt. They were able to find a decent amount of food. They were able to find nuts, fruits, and the berries that they collected. More comparison with Eden, eating from the trees and plants that grew in the garden. And Claire comes across two deer, not bothered by her, as she washes at the creek. And then she feels her instinct reaction, an instinctual reaction. The hair rises suddenly on her body. She feels danger, but doesn't know where it's coming from. Then she sees the cat. Grooming, stretching, and then it walks away. Now, Summer, of course, this is like a panther or something, or a mountain lion. Yeah. Have you ever had that sort of fear where you're frozen and then you come to yourself, whatever caused it, and then you come to yourself and you're I guess in shock, and you kind of like get shaky after it's passed?
Yeah, like every time I have to slam my brakes on in the car because some idiot's not paying attention.
Okay. What about like in nature?
I was come upon by a deer.
Oh gosh.
And it scared the crap out of me because it made a ton of noise running out of the brush and I didn't know what it was. Well, I just heard the noise. I was outside watering the apple plants at my boyfriend's house. I just heard this big crash running through the brush and I stood up all the way and I looked around and he was, this buck was standing across the driveway staring at me and I was staring at him and it became a game of, "You go, no, you go, no, you go." And he wouldn't leave and he wouldn't stop looking at me. So I finally just turned my back on him. And then when I turned back around, he was gone.
The one that comes to my mind, I was stopped at a stoplight, behind people at a stoplight. And the person behind me hit me, probably going 35 to 40 miles an hour. And I was stopped. So there was no momentum or anything in my car to take her brunt. It was all my car. And the car was thankfully already paid off, but it was big, thankfully, and it took the brunt. I did have whiplash though, but then I, silly me, I did call my employer, but I like continued to drive to work in the car after exchanging information. But and then I went to work. I'm like, okay, well, I've done that. I'm going to go to work now. And I go to work and I'm like, I had already called my boss and I get there and I sit down at my desk and I'm like, blah, 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 blah. I mean, imagine me on like triple shot espresso, like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh my gosh, can you blah, blah? And my boss is like, "Ginger, sit down. You need to probably go home."
To be honest, if you were making those noises, I would have sent you home too.
Well, okay, I would too, but I wasn't making those noises. I was being facetious. My point is, I definitely could tell that I was in shock because I was like, my hands, my body wasn't shaking, but my hands were shaking and I couldn't relax. You know what I mean? I sat down, I knew I was safe, but it's like, because your adrenaline hits and my adrenaline was, you know, kept me going through allowed me to get through everything. And by the time I was able to get to work and then sit and actually talk to my boss about something or call our parents, I was quite a bit younger. I mean, it was just like that adrenaline like leaves you and then you're left with like the reality. It was very odd. It was very odd. So after Claire, did you hear that?
Oh, I heard it.
After Claire fills the kettle and takes a moment, the crepuscule has passed. The forest is awake and the birds are singing. She walks up to the clearing, quote, resisting that impulse to look behind me, unquote. Now, that part right there, did that remind you of anything? Resisting a character or person or whatever?
Yeah, the ghost story from What's His Nuts.
Who's what?
Oh, from the beginning.
Gavin Hayes.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, that was kind of freaky, wasn't it?
Well, it was the same thing. Don't look behind you. Just get home.
No, it was. Oh, no, you're right. So I went, well, that's not necessarily, okay, yes, that was his story. I guess, I forget the name of that monster ghost, whatever it is. But yeah, so that was Gavin's personal story with this entity, right? But that entity, I think, was part of Gaelic or Highland folklore. So you could say it's part of the Highland culture, if you will. So that represents that culture. I'm very curious if there are other representatives from other cultures of our listeners who have different cultures than we do, backgrounds as we do, than we do, about a legend, a myth, a fairy tale, a horror story, a ghost story, whatever it may be that involves something that's obviously probably scary or even something of good fortune where if you turn around, you either lose that good fortune or, you know, if it's a scary story.
Oh, like the Pillar of Salt?
Yes. So that's where I'm going. So it reminded me immediately of two things. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah, right? As they're escaping.
No. And then wasn't there another one? Greek mythology? Wasn't it like Persephone or...
Almost. I thought
Persephone was the eating of the pomegranate seeds. There was another one where it was like...
It was Orpheus and Eurydice.
There it is.
And they were lovers. Orpheus was the son of gods and he played the lute and he was so good. Lyre. And he fell in love with Eurydice and they married. She gets bitten by a snake and dies immediately. And Orpheus is so overcome by the loss of his love that he needs to do something. And so he basically goes across the river, the Stygian, the Styx, the river Styx, and he goes down to Hades and he says, I miss my love, basically. And probably partially or maybe fully because he is the son of gods and he's so talented and everyone looks keenly upon him. He is told by Hades, okay, you can have her back, but as you ascend from the underworld, she will walk behind you. You cannot turn around until you are fully, fully, fully in the world of in the upper world of the living. Will you see her, or can you turn around and see her? And as they're ascending, he can like hear footsteps and like leaves being crushed or whatever. He can tell that she's there, and he's so overcome with love and missing her that he turns around too early and she disappears. That's a very sad story too.
Which is why you like it.
Girl, you know me too well. Stop it.
I do.
Do you have a hard time finding the perfect fitting jeans that are also comfortable? Let me tell you about True Religion. You may have heard of True Religion. They have a ton of options on their site.
Well, what I think is really cool about the website is instead of like most sites where you go and you click sizing guide and it just brings up a table, like an Excel spreadsheet of here's the measurements. I feel like they went even one deeper. It almost felt like a personality profile. On top of, they did ask for your measurements, but they also went down to, hey, tell me another brand of jeans that you wear and what size fits you best in those jeans, so that it was almost a one more option to make sure that they fit you just right. So they're like, okay, well, you told us these are your measurements, but just in case, tell me another pair of jeans that you have currently that fits you great. And that made me feel really confident when selecting my jeans from the True Religion website. And they have all cuts, all colors. I personally went for, I'm really into skinny jeans right now to wear with my tall boots for the fall and the winter. Clearly not fall anymore, but we're in the winter, so I'm still wearing my tall boots. So I wanted to get a new pair of black skinny jeans. And I got the curvy fit, which is good for me because my hip to waist ratio is ridiculous sometimes, depending upon the brand. So, but these don't gap at the waist, which I think is a very important thing because I have a really hard time with that.
Now, Summer got the jeans and I got some beautiful sweaters, a really long cardigan that zipped up, like literally like almost to my ankles. It was gorgeous. And another kind of a beige sweater that absolutely, I think absolutely stunning. It's very comfortable, fabric breathes, and I definitely going to be a repeat customer. The thing I love about True Religion is True Religion believes that no matter your body type or your style, there's a true fit for you. And as I said, they don't just offer jeans. They've got t-shirts, dresses, jackets,
and jeans in almost any style you could look for. Skinny, high-rise, bootcut, straight, and retro-inspired wide leg. I also saw some flares on there. So are you ready to get the perfect fitting, most comfortable, most flattering pair of jeans? Right now, True Religion is giving our listeners 20% off your entire purchase when you use the code Outlander at checkout.
So do what we did and go to truereligion.com and enter our code Outlander for 20% off your entire order. That's kind of sad, but it's good. Jamie and Ian fell trees to prep for the build. Jamie spaces out a spot for, quote, a wee shed they can sleep in case there's rain before the cabin is ready. The shed is also for meat, for smoking and drying. Claire, having seen this in Scotland, knew a thing or two about it, and she knew she'd be voluntold for the duty of manning the fire. And if she messed up, they'd die of ptomaine poisoning. What is that? Of course I looked it up. According to Merriam-Webster, ptomaine is, quote, any of various organic bases which are formed by the action of putrefactive bacteria on nitrogenous matter, and some of which are poisonous, unquote. It's basically food poisoning, but the thing that kills them is the putrefaction bit. The food becomes poison. And he tells her the second shed they build will be for her, and then points out where the cabin will be. The walls of the first cabin were erected by the next day. It had a fire pit at one end and actually was quite cozy inside when it was lit. And then I wrote, now I just want to go camping with Jamie and Claire. And I wouldn't mind being part of that sandwich either.
Mm-hmm. See, now you're on board.
Oh, I never wasn't on board. I don't mind if Roll is around.
Trying to give me a hard time.
I'm not.
She tries to give me a hard time for being inappropriate, but she's thinking it too.
I mean, I'm not giving you a hard time. And then Jamie goes and starts to criticize his work while she pulls splinters out of his hand. He's like, but this is, there is not even, and this and da da da. And she's like, look, how many of these have you built? And how long have you spent on this? You know, she's, and he basically is like, okay, got it. She tries to get him to see, she's like, your first time is not going to be perfect, yo. It's the Madan.
Well, no, and that's what it's so good that they're making the smaller buildings first, exactly. Because they can learn.
Exactly.
They can learn by making the smaller buildings what they don't want to do on the next one. So by the time they're ready to build the big house, they'll be like experts.
So he continues about a house. He says it'll go on the high ridge where the strawberries grow. Not the cabin, a house with a staircase and glass windows. He describes the place he's going to build them. And he says he'll build a bed as fine as any in Buckingham Palace. And of course, he mentions that because Claire, when he was criticizing his own handiwork, she's like, what do you expect it to be? Buckingham Palace? Look at this. You're not. And he's like, I haven't been there, but.
This is what made me think about when he was describing the house that he was going to build with his own two hands. He's like, with glass windows. And I was like, you know, almost everything that he's talking about building and or making on the ridge, they have access to there. So you just cut down, you need more wood, you cut down the trees. You need stones, we can move them from over there. They're all free, right? It just costs some labor. However, glass windows, they can't make glass windows. Those are going to have to be ordered. So, I mean, that was the one thing where I was like, I wonder how long they're going to have to go without windows. in their house before those get delivered.
Oh gosh. Yeah, they're going to have to put like some oiled paper, not paper, but oiled cloth on it or something. Erica B. writes, I love the sound of Jamie's dream house. I am jealous that he only wants all the things modern houses have at a basic level, like glass windows and doorways so you don't hit your head. Like Jamie, though, I would love a den or study for myself, a room with books and comfy furniture where I can read in quiet without a TV blaring. Myers did come back within the month and brought 3 pack mules laden with tools, small furnishings, and the necessities, but also with Duncan Innes. By the time they arrived, there were 2 sheds built and a pen to keep horses and livestock. They had a small white piglet.
Get used to that.
Can we just say, it's not a spoiler, we're not going to say what happens, but the pig is alive in book 10. I mean, sorry, 8.
Well, if she's not, her progeny are.
Jamie got her from a Moravian settlement. Now, one of the things, this will come back. You'll hear more about this word and those people. But a Moravian settlement is a German settlement, a type of German settlement. And it had to live with them in the shed. It was too small to be in the pen. And its favorite person or being was Rollo. I thought that was adorable. Jamie and Duncan look out over the land, describing the room for more homestead.
Hormones.
They talk about the room for more homesteads. Duncan tells them that not only did they have ink and paper that he brought with him, but Jocasta sent a feather bed. Good law.
Shame she didn't send windows.
Oh, summer. Myers and young Ian come back from a hunting. Squirrel they have and turkey. They'd have meat and writing quills. And Jamie wants specifically to write to the governor that he will indeed be taking him up on his offer. In case you guys didn't know, Jamie wants to say yes.
He says yes to the dress.
Oh, Lord. Jamie asks Duncan to choose his place. He needs him to be his agent, and he'll be working in Cross Creek for him. And this is not the only way he'll pay him, but this is one way he wants to help pay him. And he says if he chooses some of his own land, he'll be working on Cross Creek, but Ian and Jamie will put his land to work, growing corn, etc. And if he chooses, he'd have a place to settle. And lovely Duncan says, I am McDo, that would be fine. I love Duncan. As agent, he'd help find settlers. Diana describes the beginning of their new cabin as having only a framing on the floor, fieldstone foundation, and a, quote, wide slab of dark slate selected for the hearthstone, unquote. Jamie wants Duncan to find him the Ardsmuir men and spread the word. Bring as many as are willing in the spring. His second duty will be to help Jocasta with the running of the plantation where possible and in business with the Navy, etc. One of the things Myers et al. Had brought with them was a small piece of iron for the hearth. It was added by Jocasta. Jamie tells Claire to keep it safe and that they'll bless the hearth before Duncan leaves. Young Ian later tells Claire that one buries iron beneath a new hearth to ensure blessing and prosperity on the house. Jocasta's blessing, quote, acceptance of Jamie's decision and forgiveness for what must have seemed his abandonment. It was more than generosity, and I folded the small piece of iron carefully into my handkerchief and put it in my pocket for safekeeping, unquote. 2 days later, they bless the hearth. The white pig and Rollo looking on. Jamie holds up the iron knife and recites a beautiful passage. He touched each person who would be living within it, Claire, Ian, Rollo, and the pig, before consecrating the place. Claire puts it quite rightly. Quote, I should have felt quite ridiculous standing in a house with no walls, attended by a wolf and a pig, surrounded by wilderness and mocked by mockingbirds. Engaged in a ritual more than half pagan. I didn't. Unquote. Claire thinks of the abandoned homestead they'd seen on their way up to the ridge. She wondered, had they thought to bless their house and failed anyway? Erica B. writes, it amazes me the number of prayers and blessings Jamie knows for situations that, while not uncommon, are things that happen infrequently. His brain must be made of something special. Then it was time for the Gaelic chanting. Duncan walked around the homestead sunwise. Now, I don't know if that's clockwise or counterclockwise. I'd have to look it up.
Maybe he just went east to west.
I think yeah, but he went around. So he didn't go straight because east to west would be straight. But yeah. Okay. He paused at each of the compass points. And I'm not even going to try. Homeboy, like a crap ton of verses. Even Diana shared a crap ton of verses. Claire realized that the cabin had arranged it. So the hearth lay to the north. Duncan gave his brand to Jamie, who lit the kindling. They were done. Myers and Duncan left for Mount Helicon, quote, where Scots of the region held a yearly gathering in the autumn to give thanks for successful harvests, exchange news, and transact business, celebrate marriages and christenings, etc. Jocasta et al. Would be there. It was the best place to go to begin the hunt for settlers. Jamie tells Duncan to tell Jocasta that he won't see her at the gathering that year, nor perhaps the next. But after that, he promises to be there. And then they were again alone.
That was chapter 19. And now we're going to move on to chapter 20, entitled The White Raven. I love this chapter.
Me too. Jamie is translating Marcus Aurelius's Meditations for funsies. At least he's doing it for young Ian's benefit. Young Ian doesn't really see it that way. While he and Ian are carrying the squared log into its a squared log into its place for the cabin. But it's lunchtime, and just in time, they have company. Erica B. writes, time has been really flying, and now we find ourselves in October. I'm thankful Diana saved us a month's worth of house building and Greek studies. As much like Ian, I could care less about the Greek stuff. Okay, so I have practiced quite a bit, and I think I'm, with the help of Davina to get me the sound, and then the help of my brain and tongue and my own ear, I believe.
I don't want your tongue to help me with anything.
Shush. I think I have most of the, well, say most. Yeah, not most. Indian names in this chapter I've got. So the visitor, it was Nkagna Wayto, the erstwhile bear killer. The ones who were going to try to kill the bear before Jamie did it. He was accompanied by three women, two of them with large bundles. Quote, one was a young girl, no more than 13 or so, and the second in her 30s, plainly the girl's mother. The third woman who accompanied them was much older, not the grandmother, Claire thought, perhaps the great-grandmother. Lorraine B. writes, and so we meet the women behind Nkagna Wayto. His wife, Gabrielle, and his stepdaughter, Beat, and his grandmother, Nyawene, fill the chapter with shared bounty and mystery. I love the ongoing bits of paranormal happenings. Not once have I felt that they are out of place or that the story is taking a turn for the worst. Erica B. writes, one thing I can't wait for in the show is to hear how they pronounce the Tuscarora names, because I am just unable and tend not to read the word. Now, if she's not too far off, then meaning Davina, then I do know how to pronounce these if she's not too far off. However, if there's a word, name or not, city, name, book, I don't care, that's in a story, especially if it occurs over and over and over, but I don't have to like ever know what it is. You know what I mean? Like I don't have to talk about it to anybody. I will like under my breath or in my head, like pretend Nkagna Wayto was a word I didn't know how to pronounce. I had no clue. And I really didn't care, you know, as far as I care about the character, but it doesn't matter to me if I pronounce his name right. If that were my thought process, then I would just be like, not cover. I mean, you know what I mean?
I'd
be like
that dude
or that dude. Yeah. N, I call him N, you know? So yeah, I mean, there's tons of times where I'm reading a book or a story. Like when you're audiobooks, you really can't, but there are tons of times when I completely gloss over something on purpose, because to stop and try and pronounce something is not aiding to my understanding of a story. Now, I'm going to say it, since you're listening, you get to listen. But I hear you, girl. Totally. Nkagna Wayto was dressed really fancy. Jamie is surprised. Quote, it's an ambassage, or it's ambassage. Okay, I got to find this word. I can't do this. Ambassage. Well, it's French, so I can totally. Okay, here we go. Okay, so we're going to go with the French. If there's an anglicized thing like there is, I don't even want to go back, but what was the thing I had a kerfuffle about? Creme de menthe? If there is an anglicized version of ambassage or whatever, then let us know. Merriam-Webster does not have a listener thing. YouTube kind of had an anglicized version of a French-sounding word because it is a French origin. But the site, the next site I went to, like literally legit pronounced it ambassage. So like literally French. So I will just say, Jamie is surprised. Quote, it's an ambassage.
That was surprising.
Right? And he tells Ian to... I can't stand it. He tells Ian to, quote, make my curtsies while he goes and spiffens up a bit. Go make your curtsy for me. Come on. Make it pretty. Make it pretty. Go down low enough or it's going to be insulting. Jamie grabs Claire and takes her into the house, telling her to get dressed. Put on your gaudiest things, I just imagine Jamie going, Ian, you go over there. You curtsy. Claire, come with me. And he like drags her into the house. He's like, put on your mother, father, most gaudy, ugly thing you have.
And it's to her credit that she doesn't have that many things that fall into that category.
No, because they had like, what do you call it? Shipwreck?
is that what you call that?
What? When they landed on the coast? Yeah. Okay. Erica B. writes, I also just looked up the word ambassage, and it directed me to a website with the definition. In an example of usage, the first quote is from A Breath of Snow and Ashes. Yes, I don't think I have the link. Oh, no, Erica. Oh, now I don't know if we can find that. That's too perfect, Erica. That's awesome. So Claire puts on a yellow skirt and a kerchief that was embroidered with cherries. Jamie puts on his crimson plaid. Of course. Jamie and Nicognoedo did the necessary greetings and ceremonial pouring of sharing of brandy along with young Ian. Then one of the women came forward and spoke to them in French. She was Nicognoedo's wife, Gabrielle. The older lady was Nayawene, Nicognoedo's grandmother, quote, light-boned, thin, bent with rheumatism, but bright-eyed as the sparrow she so strongly resembled, unquote. And, quote, she wore a small leather bag tied round her neck, ornamented with a rough green stone pierced through for stringing, unquote. The girl was Gabrielle's daughter, but not Nicognoedo's. Her name was Berthe. She brought out a bundle, and in it was squash, dried fish, yams, Indian corn. Claire, ever the tactful one, says, my God, the return of Squanto.
Mm-hmm.
Unquote. Lorraine B. writes, I love the way Diana casually throws in historical references. I looked up Squanto to find out he was a Native American interpreter and guide to the Pilgrim settlers at Plymouth during their first winter in the New World. So here we equate Berthe to him in the role of interpreter. I thought Gabrielle was interpreting.
I thought so too.
I think Gabrielle was interpreting. Erica B. writes, I'm impressed that Claire didn't freak out when Nayawene fondled her clothing. It seems to me in the description that it would have been more touchy-feely than I would have liked it if it were me. But I suppose given the circumstances, I too would have just gone along with it. Now remember, wasn't it Nicognoedo or is it one of his sons that came up and like gave Claire's boob a squish?
He squished her boobie because she was wearing buckskins.
Well, yeah, but was that Nicognoedo or one of his sons? Probably Nicognoedo.
Who cares? It was one of the dudes. The point is if she's going to let a dude grab her boob, she's not going to be that worried about...
This is nothing.
...an old lady touching her clothes.
Summer, say the Indian's name.
No.
Is this our new friend?
Probably.
Oh, Lord, this is going to be so much fun. We have how many chapters left? Actually, how many books left? There's so many Native names. Oh, Lord, this is going to be... Oh, Summer, this is going to be the best.
It's going to be the best for you because you're going to get to pronounce them all. I'm going to go, you know,
no.
The Native American guy.
Which one? There's like 80.
No, the other one. Nope, not that one. The other one.
They're told that this is a thank you. All the stuff, all the gifts. For the bear. While this is going on, Nayawene goes to Claire and takes a gander. She's surprised at her hair. Claire takes it down for her. Jamie shows Nicognoedo the house. By this time, the chimney was complete. built also of fieldstone, and the walls, however, were only yet at shoulder height. Gabrielle was the daughter of a French fur trader and a Huron woman, the second wife of Nacognoweto, who had been her second husband. The Frenchman had been killed in the French and Indian War 10 years prior. They lived in a village called Anauka, about 2 days' travel northwest. Claire has the feeling that Nyawene is telepathically communicating with her. Jamie offers the rest of a bottle of brandy to Nacognoweto. Claire gives Gabrielle the embroidered kerchief and Bert a hairpin. She gave Nyawene 4 large ginseng roots. In return, she received the cloth bag from her belt. So, herbalist medicine woman Claire meets herbalist medicine woman Nyawene. She asked Gabrielle about Nyawene's amulet. The Indians call Nyawene a singer, shaman. Her name means, it may be, it will happen. Then Nyawene slipped her amulet off her neck and gave it to Claire. The two other women were startled. Claire gives the amulet back after fingering it. Gabrielle translated that Nyawene would happily show her useful plants that grew nearby. Erica B. writes, with Nyawene's necklace, do you think it was similar to the one Master Raymond gave Claire, in that it has a special ability? I don't know. What do you think, Sam?
I mean, I've read the rest of the book. So I don't feel like I don't feel comfortable like pretending to guess what I think it is.
Nyawene and Claire go off looking at plants. And then Nyawene tells her, through Gabrielle, that she had a dream about her 2 months prior. She had seen a woman with Claire's hair. 3 days later, her husband and his sons returned, telling of their meeting, the woman with the hair and the bear killer. She said at once that she must see Claire. When she dreamed about her, it was at that pool. It was there at night. She became a white raven, Claire did, flew over the water and swallowed the moon. Quote, the white raven flew back and laid an egg in the palm of her hand. The egg split open and there was a shining stone inside. Nyawene knew this was great magic, that the stone could heal sickness. Unquote. The day after the dream, she went to dig for a root, and on it was something blue sticking to the clay of the riverbank. It was a gemstone, a sapphire. They called it Pierre sans peur. A fearless stone. Such a stone keeps people from being afraid and makes their spirit strong, so they'll be healed more easily. And she says it's already healed people. She thanks Claire for the gift. Claire gives her back the blue stone, then rubbed one of Claire's curls between her fingers. Quote, you have medicine now, but you will have more. When your hair is white like hers, that is when you will find your full power. Unquote. Quote, the old lady dropped the lock of hair and looked into my eyes for a moment. I thought I saw an expression of great sadness in the faded depths and reached involuntarily to touch her. She stepped back and said, you must not be troubled. Sickness is sent from the gods. It won't be your fault. Unquote. And she refused to say anything more.
See, that's the problem with prophetic people. They never want to give you all the information you need to adequately deal with a situation before it happens. They just want to give you just enough to bother you.
Exactly, to make you worry.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. I'm not going to say your name.
Nyawene?
Yeah, that one.
No, but what were you about to say about her?
Her name, but then oh. I decided I didn't want to.
Summer, you're too much. Okay. Erica B. writes, this moment by the fishing hole is quite weird. Claire is told that she was in this woman's dream and turned into a white raven. I did some interneting for white raven and found several places where it is in reference to Native American lore, in that when a white raven appears, the end of times is coming. And she provides a number of links. A more amusing mention of white raven, Erica B. writes, on the internet, quote, oh, well, oh my gosh, our show is, if it's not bear sex, it's white ravens. We are becoming a haven for Game of Thrones stuff. Gracious. Quote, in the Game of Thrones season 6 finale. Oh, that's like the one we just, the last one we watched, right? No, 7?
I think we just watched 7.
Okay. In the Game of Thrones season 6 finale, Sansa tells Jon that they've received a white raven from the Citadel. Usually message-carrying ravens in Game of Thrones are black. Since Sansa and Jon received the white raven, winter has officially arrived in Westeros. Unquote. Winter is coming, you guys!
They clearly read the same book.
No.
George R.R. Martin and Diana Gabaldon.
Oh, seriously. I'm telling you. Now, regarding white raven in a dream, she provides a link for this as well. There is usually a profound change of consciousness imminent when raven dreams occupy your sleep. Hence, the message of this dream is to make sure that you watch for the clues and guidance that will enable you to soar to new heights. Also, if this bird is still and silent and looking at you in your dream, he is invoking magic. When this happens, you should pay close attention to the surroundings and prominent colors of the dream for further clues. If this black corvid is loudly calling at you, he is insisting that you take notice of your surroundings. There is something in your life that you are missing or you have forgotten an important lesson learned. Therefore, it may be a very good idea for you to do some meditation and introspection. A raven flying loops and upside down playfully is telling you to fasten your seatbelt because everything has gone into hyperdrive. Absolute magic is afoot. In the event that this large black bird is attacking you or dive bombing you in your dream, it is letting you know that the direction you're heading is not really where you want to go with your life. You must step back and reevaluate before making your next move. There's usually a profound change of consciousness imminent when raven dreams occupy your sleep. Occasionally, a raven symbolism in the dream can signify an impending death. This is usually signaled by feeding on carrion or preening of its feathers to show rebirth. Thus, a pure white raven dream indicates that you are now on your divine path of light and should keep up the good work. And there is a group of white ravens that live in the Pacific Northwest, too. I am not sure what to make of Nyawane's dream, but it's all very ominous if you ask me. Dreaming of ravens in general is not a good sign, but there was an egg and a healing stone, so I guess it couldn't be all that bad. But the comment at the end about sickness, that's what's really weird and will haunt you for the rest of the book trying to figure out what she's referring to. Lorraine B. writes, while talking with Berthe, Claire gets the feeling that she and Nyawane are communicating on a nonverbal level but doesn't elaborate, leaving it to our imaginations. And then we are introduced to Nyawane's amulet and the magic that might lie within as Claire fleetingly feels that something inside is alive. When Nyawane invites Claire to walk with her to find useful plants, that makes me think that earlier the two of them were non-verbally sharing their love of healing and that Nyawane has picked up on Claire's ability to center in and see the inner workings of the body while doing surgery. And then we find out that Nyawane dreamed of Claire. Mystery and synchronicity deepen with Nakagnoweto and his sons meeting up with Claire and Jamie, and the fact that his grandmother dreamed of meeting Claire at the stream, close to where Jamie and Claire decide to settle. Will we ever find out the meaning of her dream where Claire turns into a white raven, swallows the moon reflecting in the stream, flies back, and lays an egg in her hand where it spills open, revealing a shiny stone? Or is it just Nyawane's psychic ability telling her that she will find the sapphire and what will become of Claire? We know that gems protect time travelers, and perhaps they do that by making them less afraid and stronger in spirit, as Nyawane tells us, but will we find out through Claire that they also help heal people? The promise of Claire coming into her, quote, full power once her hair turns white, as foretold by Nyawane, has me squeeing in delight. Just what will that mean in the final two books? I can only guess that it may have something to do with what we learned in the space between, which is they call it a bulge, right? It's a novella, one of the small books, The Bulges. Lorraine continues, the whole chapter gave me chills as each level was revealed, as did Nyawane's portent of a sickness to come. Her admonishment for Claire not to blame herself will definitely fall on deaf ears. So now we know that something very bad will happen. We just don't know when or to whom. Again, I will say that what could be fairly boring or predictable part of the story is something that is far from it. Diana has a way of leading us slowly down a rabbit hole that keeps us turning the page well into the wee hours and has a suffering Droughtlander between books.
And that was chapter 20. Join us next time when we continue part 7 by moving on to chapter 21 entitled Night on a Snowy Mountain. This one's long, y'all. And we'll also be doing chapter 22 entitled Spark of an Ancient Flame.
As always, join us to continue the conversation in our exclusive Facebook community. Find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you want to contribute to our Drums of Autumn read-along, go to www.outlanderpod.com/DOA to find out more.
If you love our show and are entertained by it.
That would be it.
And are entertained by me and my mispronunciations and Summer's refusal to pronunciate. See, we have so much fun. If you love our show and are entertained by it or us, whichever, we don't care, please visit our Patreon page and consider supporting us. Every bit helps cover our costs, be it hosting, recording equipment, etc. Giveaways, all the giveaways. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. The most important one is that you can help spread the word. Tell your friends and family about our show. If you know anyone or if you're part of a group, a Facebook group that loves Outlander, mention our show. If you're on Twitter, go ahead and give us a retweet to one of our episodes. Anything like that. Anything and everything helps promote our show and bring in new friends. Thank you, dear listener, as always, for joining us. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.